spare you.
There are times when a Corps commander's life does not count.
Okay, that was from the movie Gettysburg from 1993, part of Pickett's Charge. Welcome to episode 7 of Wargamers. Today we're going to be sitting down with Johan Nagel of Every Single Soldier. Probably familiar with this developer. He's behind some great titles like Vietnam 65, Afghanistan 11, and Carrier Deck. We got a chance to sit down with him, and here is the full interview. Enjoy. Okay, welcome everyone for episode 7 of Wargamers. I'm here with Johan Nagel. How are you, Johan?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you doing?
Not bad, not bad. How's your day going?
We just uploaded a patch for Carrier Deck, so it was busy, but now I'm free for the rest of the weekend.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, it's Friday, so everybody's going to get their beer on.
Yeah, directly after this, I'm going for that beer.
Nice, nice. I think you deserve it after all the stuff that you've been up to lately with releasing all these games.
It certainly has kept me a little busy, but I mean, it's been fun. So, you know, I'm loving it.
So a couple questions. Let's just dive right into it. So the first question I got is, what do you do at Every Single Soldier? What's your position in the company and what do you do?
Okay, so Every Single Soldier is really, it's the company that I formed that I'm the sole member of. I have one or two partners from my banking days that I keep as a technical reference. So how it works is I design, finance, and produce the games, and then I outsource them to studios locally or internationally, and then I just direct them on a weekly basis. So that's really how it works.
Okay, so there you have studios in locally, or do you like contract with studios like throughout the world?
Right now, I'm using two studios in South Africa, and I'm just about to sign the studio in Poland, which I'm off to in about 2 weeks' time. So I'm definitely, the capacity here in South Africa is a bit limited, so I'm really going overseas now to find studios and form relationships with them.
Wow, okay. So is this your primary job, or is this, you know?
I was in banking for 30 years. I took retirement, so to speak. Had enough of the corporate world. This is a passion of mine. So right now, this keeps me busy. It keeps me out of trouble, and it keeps me only to drink on a Friday.
Yeah. Well, versus every single day when the stress gets too much.
Absolutely. Every single alcoholic, you know, you could change the brand.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you have two studios under your belt. How many, if you had to kind of combine those two studios, I'm just kind of curious about, did like both studios work on each game, or how does that work? Is like one studio did Afghanistan, another studio did Vietnam. How did that work out?
So Vietnam 65, I used a different studio. So there's only really three or four studios in the country that are willing and able to do the work I need. So Vietnam 65 I did with a different studio. Currently, Afghanistan and Carrier Deck have been done by singles of the same studio with two different teams, which is Retro Epic. And then I'm working on two new titles, and they're going to be going overseas because Retro Epic is really at capacity.
Okay, wow, all right, wow. So my question to you is, you were saying you were doing banking for 30 years, which is quite a long time to be in the industry. What inspired you to start making strategy games? I mean, was it just like you're having a beer one day and you're like, you know what, I'm going to start making strategy games?
A little deeper than that, I come from a very military family. I was in the military, and I have been wargaming since the age of, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years old. I love it. I grew up on Squad Leader. The thing is that I realized the military in this country wasn't going to be a career, so I chose a career to earn some real money, and I chose to keep the strategy gaming as a hobby. And then about 2 years ago, I was a little bored in the banks, and I thought, let me go and try and publish this game called Vietnam 65 that I've been working on for years as a concept. And it was really kind of a party trick, to be honest. It went really, really well. And I decided, well, it was a sign, time to get out of the corporate world, relax a little bit, and have some fun with making games. And it's hard work, but it's fun.
Wow. What was the I mean, if you don't mind me asking, since you said since you were eight, what is the one game that you would say kind of drove your passion? Like for me, like back in the day when I was back in the single digits days, I believe it was PTO from Koei. That was the game that inspired me. I got into it. So board game wise or computer game wise, what was that one game that just said, this is incredible?
There were two. The board game was definitely Squad Leader. That was my real introduction, and I went through the Cross of Iron, Crescendo of Doom. The entire sequence. It was fascinating to get a rule set that covered such detail. So I really liked that. But the game that really got me going into about designing games was Operation Flashpoint, the sort of precursor to Armor,
Oh,
and
okay.
they had a fantastic editor on that machine. In fact, the first iteration of Vietnam 65 was running on Operation Flashpoint 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's where I perfected and I sort of got the whole model together. So that's really how far back it goes.
Wow. Okay. So that's the basically the behind the scenes of I mean, why, if you don't mind me asking, why Vietnam 65? I mean, there's a lot of conflicts
Yeah.
go into. Why particularly that? And it's set during the, I think, the Idrang Valley campaign, I think, right? The time frame.
Well, it's kind of abstract. It's not really set anywhere. It's kind of an abstract of the conflict. But I mean, World War II has honestly been played to death. I've played D-Day probably 30,000 different variations of it, and I was fascinated with helicopters. Even when I was in the military, helicopters were sort of coming into operational use. And it was fascinating, this heli-borne thing. And of course, Vietnam was like the Huey was everywhere. So I was really interested in that. And my military history comes from counterinsurgency warfare. So helicopters, counterinsurgency warfare equals Vietnam for me. So I've been studying that war. I've visited every single battlefield in Vietnam personally. I mean, it's a passion of mine. So yeah,
Oh
that's where
wow,
it comes
you actually went to Vietnam, really?
from. Numerous times. Yeah, no, I collect Vietnam militaria. I'll show you a helmet. Things like this.
I don't know. We don't have a live feed. I just have a picture of your
I
thing.
don't have a live feed. I know, so I collect militaria, all sorts of things, but mostly Vietnam. I just love the era.
Okay. Wow. The I mean it's very it's a very, how do I say, difficult error to kind of replicate into war games, primarily because a lot of games can't replicate the insurgent warfare, the attack and hide, seek and hide, kind of thing. And one thing that really struck me about the engine that you use is it replicates my first game. I didn't get it, before Afghanistan, I didn't play Vietnam 65, and my first interaction with your games was Afghanistan, and I was kind of blown away by how incredible it replicates insert like the actual warfare of insurgency, because I recall one part I was playing. I was my one of my I think it was a Chinook, right? And I had a Chinook heading back to base, and I had a Cobra, one of the attack helicopters, kind of like guiding it, kind of supporting it. And the insurgents fired a RPG at it. My Chinook went down. I lost a whole company of soldiers. And I had my attack chopper heading to it, and then these guys just vanished into the desert, which is what you always hear from soldiers, in Afghanistan or Vietnam. It's like they just vanished. And it's like, how is that possible? And that's because of, elements during the terrain and stuff like that. But you replicated it so well. It's just like, I got so frustrated. I was like, damn it,
But it is frustrating, I mean, our counterinsurgency war, which I served in, was the parallels to Vietnam, to Afghanistan are rich. It is incredibly frustrating. I mean, we used to pack for days following up a lead or some intel, and there was nothing there, and a lot of people are expecting this explosions and World War II type scenario, and this is not the game that we're making here. There's an undertone of frustration that's inherent in coin warfare. And that's what I'm really trying to replicate is that frustration, but it's got to be slightly enjoyable, otherwise you're not going to play it.
Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, like when I was playing this, I was telling a historical gamer during one of our last podcasts, I was telling him, I said, the reason I love this game is because I feel like a base commander. I feel like a colonel, lieutenant colonel, who would ever be in charge of a battalion on the base, where I'm getting
you know, I'm sending soldiers out. They're getting attacked with IEDs, you know, RPGs. I'm sending more soldiers out. And you get that frustration, like you were just saying, you get that frustration, but also you get that immersion of what a battalion commander or brigade commander would feel like. And it just, it does something very few games are able to do, where it puts you in their shoes and you feel exactly the frustration that you get. Because I, you know, I talked to, there's a lot of, when I was in military, I talked to a lot of guys that were coming back, and I was asking them, like, what's the number one thing? It's just like frustration, because they just, they're there 1 minute and they're gone the next. And it's just, you just get really, that those are the kind of stories you always constantly hear of, and your game replicates it perfectly, you know.
That's really the intention, but the, you know, the tricky part is also to keep it balanced and fun to a degree, because, you know, sitting, you know, patrolling for half an hour on your PC at 11 o'clock at night, not getting any action is quite tricky to keep someone engaged in the model. So the balancing, and I don't, I'm saying we know we're close to getting the balancing right, but we're certainly on the right direction. But certainly, I mean, right now, even in Afghanistan 11, from about turn 30 to turn 45, I'm having a balancing issue. It's becoming too tedious. You know, and I'm just trying to think of ways to spice it up or shorten that period of time. So we're working on quite a few concepts now to improve that. But, you know, modeling coin warfare is incredibly tricky, because you are dealing with hearts and minds at the end of the day.
Yeah. That, I mean, the first thing I was doing was when I was playing the game, you know, to be honest, I never found it tedious, because I think between the music and – so I remember when Afghanistan opened up, I was starting to play it in the beginning, was you know, you're giving soldiers, the learning curve, which was really quick. And I appreciate that. I was able to pick it up within literally 5-6 minutes. There's certain games that I play that I'm like, you know, half hour into, I'm like, geez, I'm a good example would be, I don't want to mention it, but there's a few games, a big blockbusters that I, you know, it takes me like a half hour, an hour to try to, like, you know, and they're sequels. So it's just like, why am I taking this long to learn how to play this new sequel to the game that I've been playing for the last 10 years? And I appreciate your game, because it was like 5 minutes, and it's the first time I ever played any of your games, and it was really incredible. But the cool thing about it was the music, along with, you know, I sent some soldiers out to the villages to try exactly like what you said, win hearts and minds, you know, because I know that's a big thing in Vietnam and Afghanistan, win hearts and minds. So I went there, I tried to have those soldiers visit and be like, whatever, you know, deliver aid and such. But then you got the music, which kind of gives you that instill of something's gonna happen, you know. You're on the edge.
Very good. Music was good. Also, we learned from the big lesson. I mean, we learned so many lessons from Vietnam 65 being our first attempt. But the big one was we actually went very light on the tutorial in Vietnam 65. And we got a lot of pushback from the users saying that the learning curve was too steep. So we put a lot of effort into the tutorial base, sort of the first 4 or 5 missions in A11 to try and get the message through. Because if you don't get the concept in A11 early on, you're not going to get the game later on at all. You know, that's the issue.
How much, I'm just curious, how much work did you guys put into that music and the audio? Because I really took notice of that.
Well, I contracted it out to a local art studio. Well, I actually tendered it out to like 5 or 6 composers. And that music, when I heard it for the first time, I just went, that's it. I just, there was tension, and it was Middle Eastern, and it was fantastic. I loved it. So we tended it out, it came out, and it was very good. So I was very, very pleased with the music. Carrier Dick is another story. I mean, Carrier Dick was more like we tried to get as close to Top Gun as we legally could, you know, from a competition point of view. But it came out a little bit repetitive. But anyway, that's another issue.
That's what I felt like when I was playing the game. I felt like that guy who was the CAG aboard the, you know, the one who says, son, your ego's writing checks, your body can't cash.
Yeah. That's it.
I felt exactly like that guy.
That was it, yeah.
So, Michael, my other question would be, like, how long did it take to develop Vietnam 65 and then Afghanistan? Like, were they about the same, and how long did it take?
So Vietnam 65 took from when I started, after I'd made the decision to go in production, because, I mean, the concept's been distilling in my head for 15-odd years. And I've been improving it, you know, using various other models like Operation Flashpoint to perfect it. But it took us about a year from the start to finish, from production, because there was lots of things we were just adding. And the scope creep was amazing because, you know, as the game was getting into production, I had to take things out, which really upset me. I mean, there's a lot of things I took out that I've now started to put back into A11. So Vietnam 65 took about a year, and Afghanistan 11 took about 9 months, because we kind of were building on a concept that was kind of proven. We just had to, put the nuances in, because the last thing I wanted to do was do a reskin. Anyone that plays Vietnam 65 and A11, I don't think I can be accused of reskinning the game. It's a completely different mechanic, although the core mechanic is the same.
Yeah, I noticed that Afghanistan feels a little bit more, I would say a little bit more in depth.
Much deeper. I mean, the density is much higher. I mean, it's because I'm bringing in factors like nation building and political events and the things that I took out of Vietnam 65.
Yeah, it's I mean, I can clearly see the differences between those two games. So one was a year and the other one was 9 months, you were saying.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, wow. So my question that another diving more deeper into the subject would be, we got Afghanistan, we got Vietnam. Those are two major things. What other conflicts do you see this particular engine model being used for?
So the path right now is we're busy working on the British Army DLC for Afghanistan. So that should be coming out sometime September-ish around. We're actually quite far down the line. The artwork's been done. We're just doing some programmatical changes. And it's not just going to be a British reskin. It's going to have some new features, like the Afghan police are going to be involved. And, so we're going to bring
Oh,
some new
wow.
stuff in. Yeah, so we bring some nice depth in. And after the UK Army DLC, we're going to be doing the USMC DLC. So we're gonna bring in the Marine Corps. That makes a lot of Americans happy. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Knowings want us. Their own little section there.
And then after I've appeased the rest of the world, the next iteration or the next sort of step in the journey is I want to do Angola 86. I want to do my own war, in that model, because I'm dying to do that. That's really where I want to end up. And after that, we're going to do the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So that's the path. So that's the path for, say, the next maybe 18 months. That's kind of where we're at. And then ultimately, John, we're going to come back to Vietnam. Absolutely. We're coming back at Vietnam 66. And it's going to be all the learnings wrapped up into the ultimate coin warfare sim for Vietnam.
Wow, okay. So and the Soviet invasion one, that's gonna be
It's crazy.
that's yeah, that's gonna be
Yeah.
huge project. I mean I and wow, I mean I'm my mind is just kind of running wild with like ideas of how that's gonna work
Well,
because it's a
write them
big
down and send them to me. Write your ideas down and send them to me.
right? Yeah, I'll put them down on the but I mean the I it's just the thought of
Yeah.
running, we don't, there's not too many, the one thing is, there's not a lot of Soviet Afghanistan war games. Now that I think about it, it's
No.
only like single digits and very low single digits at that.
I mean, just very briefly, I've recently completed the design doc for the Afghanistan invasion. The primary differences from A11 would be, instead of trying to build your hearts and minds to 100, you're going to try and keep the hearts and minds above zero. If you know that makes any sense, because they didn't exactly have a hearts and minds strategy. They didn't have a nation building philosophy. They had a brute force strength, let's suppress everything and try and control it mentality. And
I
then
see.
we introduced supply coming from the tunnel, North Tunnel, coming down to the base. The pass, I forget the name of the pass, but the supply is now going to be coming by truck from the north into the base as a continuous issue to safeguard. And then the Mujahideen are going to be using caravans to bring weapons in and take opium out, and that's how they're going to get the stinger and all that sort of stuff's going to come into the game. So those are the final, those are like the high level tenement changes we're making.
Oh wow, okay. Wow. And do you feel like these games, since you already have the foundation, they're gonna be much quicker rollout than 9 months?
Well, definitely. I mean, the UK and the UK and the USMC DLCs are going to be much quicker. We're working on about 3 months a piece.
Okay.
So those two should be out.
What are gonna be like the biggest I mean, besides like changing out the icon, like USMC, what special features will we see with like adding UK Army and USMC? I know like I know what the Marines are good for. They're the spearhead from a lot of the devil dogs that I talk to. They always say that they're spearhead. They're what are my old recruiter used to say? He says we're America's 911 force.
Yeah, exactly.
So my question is, how do you kind of translate that into a game?
So what I'm doing is, first of all, I mean, clearly we're going to change all the vehicles and the uniforms and all that's going to change. So visually, you're going to get a really rich change. But mechanic-wise, we're going to be having different types of vehicles and different types of attributes to vehicles. For example, we're going to be bringing in the Jackal, which is a British light sort of recon vehicle. And now that'll be able to only carry special forces in the vehicle. And if it goes into a village, it'll get intel without disembarking. So there's going to be like these kind of slight nuanced changes. So the player then has to kind of figure out, it's going to be a different strategy. I'm taking the emphasis away from the American, which is brute power, to the British sort of mentality of clever use of limited resources. It's that kind of subtle change that we're making. The USMC, we're just going to bring those Marines in and we're just going to dump them into, bringing the Stallion helicopters. I can see the visuals now. The Stallion helicopters coming in, the Cobra gunships coming in. And then I haven't really thought about the unit changes as yet, but it's going to be more towards grunt power. That's kind of where it's going to go.
Wow. Okay. I'm assuming there'll probably be like special features, like U.S. Marines would be able to probably move faster, like a company would be able to move a couple more hexes, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's the kind of balance where I'm going to give more power to the infantry unit than it's currently displayed in A11. So it's going to be even more ground orientated. So and there'll be integrated units like snipers will be inside the units, and we're thinking of sort of infantry upgrades because the Marines are pretty good with that sort of integration. So we're going to have that sort of mentality where you're going to have at certain ranks the infantry will be able to unlock certain other sort of upgrade powers like EOD or dog handling or interpreters or snipers. So we're kind of bringing it back to an infantry model, which is really like the Marine model in my view, obviously with great support.
Yeah, that's incredible. The it's yeah this that I'm very motivated now to play this game. That's exactly what the Marines are. From what I understand is like the biggest thing that they press is every Marine's a rifleman, and Marines adapt to every situation, and it's always attack, attack, attack.
Yeah.
That makes sense to do. Well, what is the time frame for you said about 3 months each. Is this going to be more like is this going to be an additional like how much
DLCs.
DLC going to cost?
So we're kind of thinking around about the $9 mark DLC because, it's not just the new mechanics like the police and stuff that we're introducing, but we also got the full uniforms. We've got a full campaign just for the British and just for the USMC coming along with it as well. So it's quite a chunky DLC. I forgot to mention we're doing a third one after the USMC. We're going to be doing the ISAF, where
Wow.
the player will then be able to mix and match units from all different nations and then fight A11.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
That should be January, February, I think.
that's basically exactly what's going on over there. You have
Yeah.
numerous you have French, British, French Foreign Legion, British Special Force, all these guys working together.
Yeah,
Perfect.
so I thought that that'd be a nice way to end off the DLC chain for A11 before we progress to Angola.
Okay, wow, that's incredible. I'm really looking forward to that.
So am
$9
I.
is like a good price point for all that content, because that's dynamically changing the game too.
Absolutely. And John, what I'm trying to do is not just reskin, I'm trying to build the coin model and every iteration. So whenever I bring in the British or the Marines or the ISAF forces, there's going to be fundamental changes or additions into the underlying game mechanics as well.
Another question I have would be like, are you guys going to drop in some Marine Corps like background, change the music to kind of, fire Marine Corps wise?
I mean, visually and audio-wise, we're even thinking about changing the accent of the audio, but I'm not sure if that's a good idea or not. But we're investigating a more aggressive kind of tone to the game,
Yeah, you can definitely define Marines as
Yeah,
aggressive.
that's how I would sum them up.
All right, let's see. Now, so we've talked a little bit about the games that you're developing. The one question that I have would be moving those games to the tablets and phones, because you did Vietnam 65 for the tablet.
Yes.
I believe it first came out for the... Did it come out simultaneously for tablet and PC?
Simultaneously. Yep, together.
Now, I've heard that you were in Slytherin and you are in the process of moving Afghanistan to tablet.
So with the UK DLC, also it'll be on tablet. So we are synchronizing the UK DLC launch with the launch onto iPad.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Pretty much so. We sold about 60-40, 40 being iPad, 60 being PC on Vietnam 65. So a good market for us.
Wow, really? 60-40?
Yeah. I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, generally the developers I talk to that make PC and tablet games, some of them, you know, they make profit off the tablet side, but not close to 60-40. That's...
Yeah, but remember, the game we're making here is in the sort of light category. It's not, you know, this is not grognard stuff, you know, so, and I intentionally don't want to go there, you know, I still play myself, but I'm so tired of saying this 8 plus that 6 beats that 7. You know, that's like, I'm after a more sort of visually, contextually easy playing kind of style of game, and definitely abstract. So that's why I think we did so well on iPad.
The you guys, are you planning to bring it to Android, of Afghanistan too, or is it just iOS?
On the advice of Slytherin, they're saying it's not really worth taking it to Android for a whole host of reasons. I'm not sure, but I think one of them is that it's just too easy to crack.
With the hacking and such.
Hacking, yeah. But I mean, so Slytherin's advice to me is keep it off Android. But right now, I mean, Carrier Deck, we're busy with the iPhone edition. That's coming.
Oh, so wow. Okay, nice.
You're taking that to the iPhone.
The iPhone edition.
Yeah, so we have to move the UI around a little bit and change the camera angle, but I'm busy actually, I'm literally playing it on my iPhone at the moment, just perfecting it. So that'll be very cool. That'll be very cool.
So now we have, we're getting Carrier Deck on iPhone. Is there a possibility that we might see Afghanistan or Vietnam 65 move to iPhone? That, since we have Carrier Deck and a couple other games that I've noticed recently are moving over to iPhone, is that a possibility?
Well, you know, John, it really comes down to practicality. I mean, the code is there. It's Unity-based. So porting it to iPad is like porting it to iPhone. I just don't know if you're going to get that player experience on such a small screen, but we're definitely going to try. But I don't know if you're going to get that feeling of, I don't know if I'd want to play Ultimate General on an iPhone. I like it on my iPad. You know, it's that sort of argument.
Yeah, the I've talked to a couple of people, a lot of developers that are also saying the same thing, that you know, it's a big difference going from a 10-inch screen to a 5-inch screen if you have a plus. For me, I guess the reason why I want is I always wind up like I always have to, you know, go to like DMV or if I'm heading out to work or something like that, and I always get stuck in like these long crazy lines that I'm there, especially when I go to Brooklyn. Forget about it. It's like, you know, I'm there for like, you know, half the day, or you have to plan the whole day for the round. It a lot of times I wind up there and I'm like, I'll go through my phone and I'm like, you know, I'm like, there's nothing to play, so I have to watch like old YouTube episodes or old Netflix. I'm standing there and it's just like, you know, I would really love to sink my teeth. But
you know, it's funny you say that, because when I was in the bank, I used to travel a lot, specifically around the country and internationally. And that's what my main drive with Vietnam 65 was, to get it so I could play it when I was on the airplane. You know, but that's why I pushed it towards the iPad. I've never really thought about the game even being a viable proposition on an iPhone. I know myself, I think the screen might just be a little too small for me, but you know, I think it's worth a try.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, maybe one day if you decide to do it, you know, I would love to.
I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, that would be incredible. But then, you know what? I'll probably get fired shortly thereafter. Like, you know, you're always on your phone.
Exactly. Yeah,
actually, so we don't make it, please.
Okay. I'll take it on good authority. I will make it, but I won't tell you about it.
Okay, sounds good, because I would get my ass chewed in. But since you have the tablet and the PC version of Afghanistan and of Vietnam, and it's coming to Afghanistan, which platform is easier to design for? Is it a PC platform easier to design for because you have that increased real estate, or is like tablet much more easier?
Have you got visual now, by the way?
Yes, I got you.
Oh, so I just fiddled with the camera a little bit, and I'm sorry, I should have done it earlier. I just noticed it's come up on the bottom there. So Vietnam 65 was designed primarily for to go out simultaneously. That was the motive. Afghanistan 11, we decided to go PC mainstream. So we didn't have to sort of we didn't have to take any hits on the quality of the visuals because, you know, we've got memory constraints with the iPad. So we decided to go PC, so we didn't have any limitations when it came to memory. And it's proving to be quite a tricky game for us to move it from PC now to iPad because of the memory issue. So the iPad version of A11 will look good. It'll look great, but it won't look 100% like the PC version. But originally, Vietnam 65 was designed for both.
Yeah, the Afghanistan visuals were, I have to, another pro for that was like, I was kind of like shocked about like the graphical look of it. It was just beautiful. Like I see bloody sandstorms going through the caverns, yeah. And I'm like, holy crap, you know, that's the attention to detail. I'm like, holy shit, you know, look at this. This is incredible. So
vehicles, I mean, you can go right in. I mean, the detail on those vehicles as well are also superb. If you go right in, it is good.
Yeah, it was incredible. So like, I know the new iPads that they just came out with, one of my buddies was telling me, he works at Cupertino, and he was telling me that before it came out, he says, you'd be surprised by it. And I'm like, and you know, I've worked for the company for a while, so I mean, it's very difficult to get surprised by it. But when it came out, the Geekbench score that they ran on it was, when they ran the Geekbench score, which is like the power of the tablet, it was more powerful than the laptop that I'm using right now, my MacBook. It's like a quarter more powerful than my current MacBook Pro.
Wow.
So I was kind of really blown away by that. And the graphical capability that they were measuring was just, it really shocked me. So I guess my question would be, is it like the older iPads that, how far down do you have to go down the totem pole? Because I know like the iPad 2 is like 7 years
old. The iPad 2 is now off the radar. We try to go to iPad 3 if we can. But that's the low water mark. You know, we're kind of moving towards the iPad 4 and up. Otherwise, we just can't really do a proper port. You know, we have to give away too much for memory. But the new iPads, like the Airs and whatever, are great. I mean, they've got plenty of VUMA in them.
Okay, so you're not having any problem with like the Air or Air 2?
No, I'm already playing Afghanistan 11 on my iPad. You know, okay. I'm playing it. It's already, we've already ported it. We just have to change the UI from the click to touch. Yeah, so we're just enhancing the UI, but the game is already ported. Yeah,
and that's a good thing because I have an iPad Air too, and I was like thinking, I was like, shoot, should I have to upgrade? Because I would upgrade for this game if you made it like only iPad Pro and such. But it's good that you're able to do it. So basically, the iPad third generation, which is I believe the Retina that came out in 2012, I recall. Okay. And the iPad 2 is kind of out the door. And that's an old iPad too. So most people that have that.
It is very old.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Upgrading. Someone that's got an iPad 2 probably couldn't afford the $30. So, you know, that's economically
sustainable. But, you know, the weird thing is people are like, you know, I always talk to people. I'm like, why don't you upgrade? The biggest problem that when I talk to people is like, people see, like right now the tablets, especially the iPad with iOS 11, a lot of people I know in the industry, like I was talking to Walt Mossberg and a couple other tech guys, and they were saying the iPad with iOS 11 is coming to the point where it can replace your computer. And that's my dream because honestly, like I love my MacBook Pro. It's great. The only problem is like you were saying, it's not as portable as a tablet because when you go on a plane, a tablet's very easy to take out and start playing. A laptop, I feel, is a little bit more cumbersome.
We're definitely on that path. I think when those two sort of lines cross and you have equal sort of processing power in your palm of your hand, you know, why would you bother with these big chunky desktops that we have at the moment trying to support VR, you know, and that sort of thing. So that's the only reason I've got a big end machine is because I love flying helicopters and I do it on the VR, you know, so.
Yeah, VR is supposed to be the a big thing. I always try to figure out how they're going to work strategy games because I'm sure those two paths will converge at one point where you have VR and AR and strategy war gaming. The only way I can kind of see it working right off the bat is kind of like a Microsoft keynote. They had like a Minecraft kind of thing, and they put like AR goggles on, and they were kind of like manipulating the Minecraft world with their with their fingers and such. And I would love to see, I mean, I can imagine like a board game, you know, on a table, and you're manipulating units by just moving them and having the graphics. So incorporating the two worlds, I think something like that would happen. But I think we're years away from stuff like that.
I think someone's going to come with a fresh take on it that we haven't even thought of yet, because just trying to take a strategy game and put it into VR right now, I don't think, you know, the weight of the VR goggles alone and the uncomfortable sort ofness to pay for 4 or 5 hours. Can you imagine playing Civilization for 12 hours and you're wearing goggles? You know, it's going to be a real challenge, you know. So I think someone's going to come up with a new approach that we haven't even thought of yet. But yeah,
I think. Yeah, I think you're right, because honestly, like even when like Google Glasses and we have VR and AR now, the biggest thing is like you have to put stuff on your head, and you know, people don't want to do that. People get corrective eye surgery, so they don't wear glasses, you know. And I remember when Google came out with that, they were like, "This is gonna be a big thing." I said, "No, it's not gonna be a big thing." People spend $3,000-$4,000, so they don't wear glasses. You're gonna make them pay $3-$4 to wear glasses.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, when it comes to flight sims, obviously, it's the logical place for VR.
Yeah, definitely. So your relationship with Slytherin and Matrix Games, how did that all start? How did you guys find each other?
So I developed V65 right to the point of publication. So I, at the point when I loaded it into the Apple Cube for and into Steam, to get it published, I got a phone call from a number of publishers. Obviously, I think these guys look at the funnels and see what's coming down. So I got a call from three or four. In fact, the first guy to call to get hold of me was the Matrix guy, Simon. Yeah. So he got a hold of me, and we got chatting, and then I got a call from JD, and I got a call from two other publishers, and I was in a serious dilemma whether to go with the publisher or not, because people don't understand, and it's the truth. I'm not doing this for financial gain. I'm not doing it for financial loss either, to be honest. But I'm doing it to break even and to have fun doing it, because that's really what I'm doing here. This is not my livelihood, not by a long chalk. So the decision to go with the publisher lot was quite a tricky one. When I chatted to Slytherin, they seemed to have the niche in the wargaming market, and that's why I sort of swayed across to Slytherin. And I literally signed with them a month before we launched V65.
Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. Excellent. That's like literally that's back to back.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I honestly wasn't launched without a publisher, so I was in two minds whether the economics and the, you know, the pros and cons of a publisher made it worthwhile. So I made that decision literally almost about 2-3 weeks before we launched it on iPad and on Steam.
Oh, okay. Wow. I'm sure that, you know, like they're really great. I've talked to a lot of people at Slytherin, and you know, my appreciation for Slytherin and Matrix has reached like pinnacle levels, because the level of titles that they create. There's some publishers that, you know, have been making strategy games for a while, and then they get a taste of the making more casual games, and then they flip over. There's a lot larger, but Slytherin is, I can see them dedicated to making, publishing, and supporting great games like your games. They're out there saying, like, pushing all this material, pushing all the support behind Afghanistan and Vietnam and other such titles. And it clearly shows that the loyalties of people that are hardcore and semi-hardcore strategy gamers. And
I hear you, Sean, but also my games are on the periphery of the Slytherin portfolio as an abstract. I mean, Carrier Deck is very much on the fringe of Slytherin's sort of portfolio. Afghanistan fits better, but it's not the traditional Slytherin game that I'm making, though. You know, so there is a slight, I don't know what the word is, there's a slight difference in style, but I mean, you know, it's a military game. At the end of the day, Slytherin is the military war game publisher, so that's how it is.
Now, with Carrier Deck, you were saying it's coming to iPhone. Do you plan to use that? Because it's a radically different game than Afghanistan and Vietnam.
Yeah.
What made you? You know, I mean, you're working on Vietnam, you're working on Afghanistan. You have a couple of games in the pipeline. Why did Carrier Deck? Because when Historical Gamer told me it was by the same developer, I was like, really? It's a very, you know, it's completely different
Wait till you see my next two, then you're also going to get a shock. They're completely different. So you must remember 30 years in corporate, Sean, how frustrated I was. I've got games backed up for literally, I think in my design folder, I've got about 7 games at the moment that I'm fiddling with. And they're very diverse, from an 18th century Royal Navy frigate to the Parajumpers, you know, the Pedro rescue crew in the American Army, to Afghanistan to Carrier Deck. So people were quite surprised when Carrier Deck came out. They went like, but, you know, we loved Afghanistan and we like Carrier Deck, but is it the same person? And it's totally the same person. You know, I've always wanted, these are the games I wanted that I'm making, you know, that just weren't there. So that's really where it's coming from. Is I've always been fascinated with an aircraft carrier and how busy that deck is, and the color-coded jerseys for the crew. You know, it was crying out for a game. So, and I also want to try and get to the more casual aspect of wargaming too. I don't want to stick to the traditional 8+6=7. You know, I want to try and get a more immersive, fun, but still military though. It's got to have credibility with military, but it doesn't have to be an absolute simulation.
So the next couple titles you have, is it gonna follow like the same? Because I mean, the engine that you're using, the entire gameplay is completely different. It's like 180 degree change. The next couple of games that you have in the pipeline, are they gonna follow the same kind of engine as Afghanistan, or we're looking at completely something different?
That's totally different. But definitely with a DLC path in mind. You know, Carrier Deck, you can imagine World War II Pacific Theater aircraft carrier, you know, or Vietnam style aircraft carrier DLC. So they're distinct engines. They're actually different development teams working on them. So I'm hoping to get ultimately I want to push out about 3 games a year is kind of what I'm working at. And so Carrier Deck is the one, and Afghanistan is still going to be my, you know, that's close to my heart. That's a path that'll take us on for another 2 years. But I'm constantly bringing in more games, and that's why I've got to go overseas to get studios, because I'm out of capacity here locally.
Wow. Okay. Wow. I'm really excited to see what you have in the pipeline. If it's anything like the last few games, it's going to be,
Different. All I can guarantee is they're not going to look or even smell like Afghanistan or Carrier Deck. They're completely different games.
And I think that's really important because, you know, there's a couple of developers out there, I won't mention names, that they use the same engine for every theater of war. I mean, like, they'll make American Revolution, Civil War, World War One, World War II, same engine. It's just like, seriously? Yeah. I mean, you're just getting the bloody game.
No, agreed. You know, that's an economic model. I think the difference with me is this is not an economic model for me. And that's why I have the luxury to go and explore different types of engines and games. You know, if I did this when I was 25, I couldn't afford it. I'd be plugging one engine to try and make money out of it. That's not my objective here. My objective now is to stay out of the bars Monday to Friday and have some fun doing it, you know? And that's why I'm doing this purely out of fun. There's no motive for me other than I want to do this, that I'm doing it.
And are we gonna see these games that are coming down the pipeline as coming to a tablet as well as for the ones that can't phone, can we expect that?
Yeah, I mean, to me, the strategy is simultaneous launch on iPad and on Steam for the games I'm making. That's the standard for me going forward.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's I'm glad to hear that. And this way, I'll upgrade my iPad and maybe take advantage of those full visuals. Because I'm assuming the higher the iPad, right? Like if I get the iPad Pro versus the iPad Air 2, you guys are gonna be able to max out.
You can crank it up. Yeah, you can crank it up. Yeah, you can crank it up. But it's but you know, when I make that one game that finally sells a really decent number of sales, you know, our sales haven't been bad. I'm not saying they're bad. They're okay. They're fair. But I'm still looking for that magic formula out there. You know, I guess everybody is, and it's a tough market.
Yeah, I think. Well, I mean, I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way of doing things. It was. I think it's just exposure. I think you know, it's kind of like a YouTube channel. You know, you can have a great recipe in the beginning. And it could be awesome, but it takes a while for people to start discovering it. And different platforms is like a huge thing, you know, going on iPhone, iPad, and stuff like that, because you're opening up to more people. And I noticed Slytherin's even going into a PS4 and Xbox One.
You're talking about Carrier Dick possibly going on that route.
Really? Okay. Wow. Yeah. I mean, if you, one exposure, you'd be like, you know, for people that, because, you know, I have a lot of people that when I worked with, they were, you know, they played strategy games, but they were only on their laptop, like, you know, once a week or something like that. And every time I would catch them, they would always be on their PS4 or Xbox One. Yeah. And, you know, I know for a lot of indie developers, being right on the PlayStation or Xbox marketplace, that just ramps up the exposure and sales and such.
Absolutely. And I think Carrier Deck fits that type of, you know, that type of platform ideally. You know, it's a casual, fast-paced kind of game. So I think I've had chats with Marco already on possibly looking at that channel. But I'm actually quite excited about putting a game onto the iPhone. You know, this Carrier Deck onto the iPhone. It'll be interesting to see how it does.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Are we expecting it sometime this year?
Well, I mean, we're basically about 2 weeks away, you know, having a publishable version. I think it's just a matter of getting the marketing strategy together and, you know, getting the whole machine to gel. But I'm literally playing it as we speak on the iPhone. You know, so it's I'm excited about it. I think I'll show it to you. So I was very excited about it. I mean, I don't know if you can see it on your screen.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
No, so it's totally playable. We're playing it. Let me just start it up. We just got to get the camera angles and that right. But you can see the game it's playable. You know, it's fully functional. It's just a matter of we have to move the UI around a little bit because of the screen. You know, we want to just squash some icons to make them smaller and make the buttons a bit bigger.
And so you're using the Unity engine for this.
Yes. Absolutely, yeah. So we just took the iPad port, you know, the iOS code, and now we're just moving the UI around. It's really been a simple matter. It's really not that difficult at all. Very powerful from Unity.
Wow, okay. Wow. I know a lot of my friends who design, I mean, I do like coding. I haven't made applications start to finish. I just add in some stuff here and there. But all my friends just rave about the Unity engine. It's just like, fantastic. I mean, on and on about it. So I didn't realize it was that powerful, where you just literally, you can make it for all these different platforms and you're just moving the UI, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the only work you've got to do is just the mouse clicking to the finger sort of pushing. You do that and it's all there. But to go from a port to iOS, we literally just took the Carrier Deck code and pushed it to an iPhone and we were playing. You know, it's really that powerful. It's fantastic. Wow. And it's very intuitive. I mean, I do a lot of work inside Unity, changing the variables and the like. It's a very intuitive language. You're a very, very, very strong language.
That's all the questions that I have. Do you have anything you want to add or any other tidbits?
No, John, I think, like you said, I think the biggest challenge everyone has these days is discoverability. You know, that is a big issue for getting war games out there. But I think... I don't know. You know, I don't know where this market's going. I find it incredibly, coming from a banking market, which is very structured, to something that is so unstructured, I find it fascinating. I'll be honest. The way this market works, it's almost like no one knows what the secret sauce recipe is, but every now and again, someone stumbles on it. So it's, yeah, it's...
From what I understand, like the app market is has changed drastically. I remember when I started back with Apple back in 2010, people were buying apps. People, like, you would have consumers coming in, they're buying a $10 app or $20 app, whatever it may be, especially on the early days of the App Store. Games were like $20 and they were just, you know, an hour to create or something like that. And they were making good money. They were the golden age of apps. But in between, I think I first started, we first started seeing it in 2011, 2012, where the migration was moving to try then buy, which is like people got the game and then developers starting to make money because people didn't want to buy apps for even today. Like, people don't want to buy $1.99 on an app. They want you to grab their attention, and that's why a lot of apps are coming out for free now. and then coming in, well, if you love this part of the game, if you want to unlock the rest of the game, it's going to be an additional $20 purchase. And right. That's the only time where I see consumers saying, okay, I really love this game. It's $20 extra to unlock the stuff that I want to play. Let me do that. But they, for some reason, like, and there's a big problem for developers in this aspect, because, you know, you can price a game for $9.99, right? And people see that and they'll say, you know what, $9.99, I'm not doing it. It's just, or even $5, they're like, no, I'm not doing it. And they'll pass the game up. But if you make it for free and unlocked, you know, and play the game for, you know, 15 minutes and then put a $20 price tag on it, then they'll be like, yeah, that's fine. Even though they could have bought it for a quarter of the price or half the price, they...
it's sad, though, isn't it? It's a sad state of affairs because, you know, I don't know how a lot of these developers survive with the current climate. You know, if someone's trying to make a living out of this as an indie developer, it must be incredibly difficult because you can play it for 2 hours on Steam and then get a refund. You know, and also, how do you get someone to play Afghanistan for 15 minutes and sell them the whole story? You know, it's almost impossible for strategy games to have that model. So, yeah, it is pretty restrictive. But you know what? I'm still going to make them because I love making these things.
And I think that's the key thing. You know, you got to do what you love. And, you know, and I feel bad for the developers. And, you know, I talk to a lot of the industry analysts and I always ask them, I'm like, where do you see, you know, apps going? And keep a couple of my buddies at Apple. I'm like, you know, and they're saying it's radically changing. And Apple's doing some really good things. I mean, they're helping developing their machine learning, putting some apps in the spotlight. Yeah. But the mentality of people has changed on how they want to purchase their apps. And, you know, the really thing shocking was, I remember I was talking to, I forgot who it was. It was one of my friends, or it might have been a colleague. And he was going to Starbucks and he was buying a latte, whatever, it was like $5. And he asked me, he was like, how can I transform this photo and add a filter? And I said, well, there's this app that makes a great filter. They have like hundreds of filters and it's incredible. It's one of the top ones in the app store. I recommended it to him. It was 99 cents.
Yeah.
And the guy was just like, nah, forget it. I was like, 99 cents.
People pay, I don't know, what does a movie cost in the US these days? $5, $10, I don't know, what does it cost to go watch a movie?
On average, where I'm right now, it's 10, but when I go to Brooklyn, it's like 15,
20. So you pay $10 for an hour and a half where you're not even interacting with this scene for an hour and a half, and you walk out of there feeling gratified, but you won't pay $5 for a 70-hour experience that's crafted for your involvement. You know, this is the dilemma that I battle with. You know, it's out of kilter. You know, it's, I don't know, it's just it is a little frustrating, but it is the market.
But I think what's really important is that you're doing it not be, you know, like to become, you know, a millionaire tomorrow. You're doing it because you love it, and I think that's why developers should continue doing what they're doing.
I honestly don't think I would be doing it if I was trying to make money out of this, to be honest, because it's a very tough model. But certainly I'm doing it because I had 30 years of hard labor in the financial sector. And I'm now have the luxury to do what I really want to do. But I'm feeling for the talent out there, you know, the 25, 6, 7 year old. How does he make it? So how does he survive? You know, and that might kill the industry. And that's what I'm worried about. It becomes big conglomerates, you know, and it's like banking. There's only like 5 or 6 major players in the banking industry. The rest are all periphery.
Yeah, well, let's. I know there are some. I know it's on Apple's and Google radar, and I know those guys are working on it. And from what I understand, I can't say exactly, but from what the people I've talked to, they said they're aware. They want to promote small indie developers, and they're working on ways to kind of make that happen. So I hope they succeed because we need more developers to get into the mix. I'm honestly hoping that we're gonna have a developer one day that takes my favorite strategy games like Liberty or Death by Koei and PTO and replicate for the iPad, because I can rest easy in my grave knowing that game will be out.
You know, it's funny you say that. You know, I'm a board gamer originally, and the first thing I check for is there an iPad version of the board game out, because you know, it takes all that administration, all the rule reading out of your life. You know, so I always look for a board game on iPad first. I mean, you know, you try and play Carcassonne when you're doing it on a board as opposed to on an iPad, you know, or any of the little fun time-wasting type of games. You know, it's so much easier when the rules are being taken care of and, you know, you have to move a little slider around. I mean, I love these coin games by Volker Grunke, you know, this Fire in the Lake and Cuba Libre, the board games. But the administration is claustrophobic. You know, you're moving these little spaces around and it takes the immersion out completely. You know, so I even got a hold of them and said, can I actually take your board games to electronic version? And they weren't very keen for some reason. I don't know. I just thought that it makes sense.
Like, yes, what, aspect.
You know, what was the big game that went live on the one where you play the whole world, the Cold War?
Twilight, I believe, right?
Twilight. I mean, that was great when they took that to iPad and to PC because it was now easily playable. I mean, I could literally play it on my PC instead of having this, you know, clunky board all over the place. So I love it when board games get digitized, but they mustn't lose the essence of the board game. You know, it's...
Yeah, and I picked up Twilight, too, and that was one of the games. I never played it as a board game, but I played it on the iPad primarily because, you know, I don't have time to, like, sit down and do board games. And I love board games, don't get me wrong, but it's hard to say, hey, let's meet up at 9 o'clock and something always happens, you know, family issue or work issue. You know, it's hard, but when you have an iPad version of the game, whether it be Heroes of Normandy, I could always play with my buddy at Apple, even though he's in California.
Absolutely.
There's no way I could play a board game with him, but I can play the same game through the tablet. So,
and you know you have an umpire in the background that's keeping score properly as opposed to interpreting clause 1.3 in the rule book, you know. So yeah, that's how it is.
All right, Johan. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on this show. I really look forward to the games that are in the pipeline.
Yeah, if you need anything, if you want anything, just ping me or drop me an email. I'm online most of the time. Except for Fridays, because I'm generally in the bar where I'm going to now. But anything.
I already have mine planned out, but I got to wait about 12 hours for that to happen.
Good stuff, right. John. Thanks for the chat.
Thanks, Johan. Thank you so much. I'll see
you. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, that does it for this episode of War Games. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. There were some great announcements from Johan and every single soldier. If you want to participate in these interviews that we do every month, be sure to head to the Patreon page or to you could also find it linked through strategywargamer.com and become a member or supporter of Patreon. This way you can submit questions to the developer for our next episode. But that does it for this episode, guys. We will see you in the next one. See you then.